What is up? What is up? What is up, people? The Sports Breakdown with Nicholas Wilcox is here. It is Sunday, July 22nd, and we're getting ready for episode 5. And I have my boy here, Ant Pappas. Ant, say what's good to the people.
What's good, people? Thanks for having me on, Nikki. I'm happy to be here talking some sports, so let's get going.
And we are happy that you are here as well. We got a plethora of topics to go over. Some NBA trades that went down, you know, some stats about NBA. We're going to talk about some MLB rookies first, and then we'll dive into some other topics later. So, we'll start off with the All-Star game just real quickly. I mean, you know, the AL brought it, you know what I'm saying? Bunch of solo home runs, Mike Trout, Aaron Judge, all the stars came out. But it was basically a pair of Astros, Alex Bregman and George Springer that really kind of tipped the hat for the All-Stars. So what do you think about some of these, like, you know, what did you think about the overall result of the All-Star game?
I mean, I thought it was a great game. I mean, 10 home runs, I mean, the most that you've ever seen in an All-Star game. I mean, the most that we've had before that was 6. I mean, if you tuned into the game to see, you know, 89-mile-an-hour fastballs and ground balls between the hole, we were watching the wrong game. All we saw was firepower from the mound, firepower from the plate. I personally loved it, and I think it was great for the game, and I think it's going to bring a lot more people to watch the All-Star game next year, which actually tends to be kind of a drag for the MLB. You watch the Home Run Derby, but the All-Star game, unless you're really a diehard baseball fan, you tend not to watch it. So I think it's good overall for the league.
Makes sense. I get that. But I mean, honestly, Home Run Derby was definitely huge this year. You know, Bryce Harper, the home run kid, one of only three guys to actually win the Home Run Derby at home. But that being said, we're going to talk about some rookies here. We're going to just talk about some guys. It's like, you know, it's about midway through the year now for MLB, and the home run stretch is basically coming down for pennants and overall wild card races. So who are some guys, Ed, that, you know, is, you know, in your eyes, you know, killing it as a rookie this year?
All right, so there's four rookies that I really want to talk about. You know, the first one, obviously, going to stick out to everybody, and that's Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani came over at the beginning of the year, very, very highly touted, international player from Asia. You know, he's a pitcher, and he plays the field. You know, something that we really don't see in the majors, you know, as frequently as we used to. So I'm just going to go ahead and go through the numbers on Shohei. So, on the mound, he's 4-1 with 61 strikeouts through 49.1 innings with a 3.10 ERA. Now, for a rookie, that's pretty solid. I mean, 61 strikeouts through 49 innings, that's significant. And the kid has touched over 100 miles an hour multiple times. I mean, rarely you see starting pitchers hit 100 miles an hour, let alone rookie starting pitchers. So from the plate, he's hitting .283 with 7 home runs, 10 doubles, a triple, 22 runs scored, and 22 RBIs. I mean, for a rookie, those are very strong numbers. They stick out, especially for an Angels team that isn't really contending for the playoffs. So to see something like that from a kid who, you know, came a long way to play baseball, who's been hurt periodically throughout the year, I think it's impressive. Another guy I want to get to is Ozzie Albies, a kid for the Atlanta Braves. Now, you know, I hear he goes under the radar. I personally don't know how it's possible that, you know, a kid like this goes under the radar with these numbers. Now, again, I'm just going to go through the numbers. Through 405 at-bats, basically through the halfway point, 114 hits, 20 home runs with 55 RBIs, 9 stolen bases, and hitting .281. Now, obviously, what sticks out, you know, other than the .281 average and the 55 RBIs, is 20 home runs. I mean, for a rookie, if we were to, you know, hypothetically double these stats, you get 40 home runs and 110 RBIs on the season. I mean, that's huge for a rookie. I mean, huge for a rookie. No one saw this coming, especially, you know, from the Braves. Moving down the line, I want to talk about a guy for the Washington Nationals, another really young guy, 19-year-old kid, who also has gone somewhat under the radar, you know, outside of baseball sharps and people in Washington, and that's Juan Soto. Through the first full month that he played, he went 26 for 82 in 100 plate appearances with six doubles, six home runs, 15 walks. You know, he's a lefty that hits for power, but he also hits for average. You know, through the halfway point, he had a 3-0, which for a rookie or major leaguer to average is very noteworthy, especially for 19. Another Braves guy that I want to get to that's a little bit more highly touted, and that's Acuña Jr. Now, these Braves guys, you know, they do go under the radar, but this was, I believe, a first-round pick. He's come back. So through the first half of this season, Acuña Jr., 169 ABs, 42 hits, 7 home runs, 19 RBIs, and 11 doubles. Now, he wasn't really a home run guy in the minors, so to see him have 7 home runs is somewhat significant with doubles guys. So doubles numbers aren't really that surprising. So moving down the rookie, the Yankees guy, Nick Torres. Again, getting numbers through the halfway point. Through 218 home runs, 42 runs scored, 10 doubles, a triple, and he's hitting 294. Now, Nick, I know you're a Yankee guy, so let's talk a little bit about Gleyber. What do you think about these numbers halfway?
I honestly think Gleyber has a shot to win the Rookie of the Year for the AL because he's only 21 years old, and like you were saying, like, he's just put it all together. You know what I'm saying? Batting 291, 346, you know, ISO average, and like 566 slugging percentage. Like, it's crazy. You know, so, like, honestly, like, Torres has been, like, really been able to do everything that the Yankees been able to, like, ask him for and then more. You know, so it's, he could definitely win the Rookie of the Year. Just because of Ohtani's injury that happened to him earlier in the year, kind of puts him at the top of the race, you know, in my eyes. I mean, of course, also, you know, is Miguel Andujar, of course, the other guy for the Yankees that could definitely get it done, Rookie of the Year, if he continues his pace. Andujar has hit 12 home runs, 40 RBIs, you know, and his walk rate has been pretty impressive as well. You know, so that being said, he's pretty much, I think it's really neck and neck between those guys. Ohtani, because he has injury and he's back and whatnot, I just feel at the end of the day, I do like Gleyber Torres as the Rookie of the Year if he continues his pace. There's a couple of guys I'd like to get to, and that's the NL. You know, Ryan Anderson, the Miami Marlins, basically leading this, the whole pack, in my opinion. I like Acuña as well for the Braves, like you were just talking about. And I just think it's going to really come down to those two guys in the race. Right now, Anderson is hitting, his average is 294. And, you know, it's just basically he has 30 walks already with 20 doubles. It's absolutely insane for a 25-year-old rookie. For a Marlins team that's, yeah, like you said, is not going to probably maybe doing much, you know, this year. So, needless to say, they probably won't be in a playoff hunt, so to speak. So, one other guy I want to get to is Charlie Villanueva of the Padres. And Villanueva, you know, now his hitting average is not exactly like what you want to see. He's hitting 229, but he leads all rookies with 19 home runs, batting in 43 RBIs. So, that being said, I mean, if we're just looking at numbers, he's definitely leading the pack. When it comes to home, when you're just hitting a bunch of power, and for a Padres lineup, that's not exactly all that scary for against most pitchers. I mean, Villanueva is still doing what he can to, you know, still be an impact player for the Padres. So all in all, I think those are my predictions for AL and NL Rookie of the Year. Your thoughts on those awards?
Yeah, you know, I like the Brian Anderson call. I mean, he's sitting right here on my list, and, you know, to be totally honest, for none of the reasons that you listed. I mean, this is a guy who, again, is going under the radar to, you know, the stat that WAR stat. Now, what is the WAR stat? The WAR stat is WAR, wins above replacement. Now, what that stat means is it's basically a metric that the baseball community uses to gauge a player's overall impact on his team winning a game. He leads all rookies in the WAR stat, meaning he's contributed to most wins directly. Now, I like the Villanueva call, but I just, I know, I like Ozzy Albies. I mean, I just think, you know, 20 home runs, 55 RBIs, you know, 281 average for a Braves team. That's going to surprise a lot of people going down the stretch. I mean, Albies is going to be right in the thick of it. This is a kid who can play the field, who can hit for power, who can hit for average, steal bases. I just really love Ozzy Albies for the NL Rookie of the Year. But, he could get unseated, like we were talking about with Brian Anderson. For the AL, I mean, people say Otani's the front runner, you know, like we were saying. He hits the four-hole, he hits nine-hole, and he hits home runs from every place. The last rookie I want to get to, I think, before we are going to move on, is a guy who has a pedigree, you know, a Hall of Fame pedigree, and that's Derek Rodriguez. Another guy who goes under the radar. This is the son of Juan Pudge Rodriguez. Now, Derek Rodriguez just won another game the other day, so he's now 5-1. His ERA is like 2.79, 2.78. I only have the stats in the first half of the year. So in 10 games, 5-1 with high 2.7 ERA. He makes people miss. And he makes the right pitches in the right situations. And he leads it's evident in 25 games for the Giants already. Very high strikeout to walk ratio. And not have been expected. But, you know, for a pitcher, I think Derek Rodriguez is one of the best rookie pitchers in the NL. As far as NL prediction for rookie of the year, I say Ozzy Albies from the Braves. AL prediction, it's going to be between Torres and Otani, but you know, I think it's going to go to Torres. If I had a vote, I would give it to Torres.
All right. Makes sense. Definitely like your analysis. So we'll go into the MVP race quickly. And, you know, it's a two-legged race basically in the AL. It's kind of, you know, NL, you could kind of pick a few different guys as well.
I might argue. I'm thinking it might be more than a two-legged race.
I mean, it at least in my eyes, it comes down to a two-man race. We could argue about that. But all in all, in the AL, it's, in my eyes, either Mike Trout or Mookie Betts at this point. I do like JD Martinez as well, but it really comes down to those two guys in my eyes, because Trout obviously is like basically the LeBron James of the MLB, and he just puts everything together when it comes to Trout. Leads all players on base percentage, and he's on pace for 40 home runs. He's walked more than he struck out. He's stealing bases, he's just doing everything like as you know. That's what Mike Trout does. He's all around like hitter. Mookie Betts, however, though, yes, like the only knock I think against Mookie, and I hate to say this as a Yankee fan, but I have to give it to Mookie Betts like at this juncture right now, because the guy hasn't played. Trout's played in more games than Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts missed about 2 or 3 weeks with an injury, that's kind of like, you know, in a sense, that's knocked him off a little bit, but he still leads. He's still like, I'm gonna say, he's still like baseball's best hitter in a sense, for batting average. And he's had like about 100 like at bats like less, like it's crazy. And he's hitting with a lot more power than I've seen in years past. And it's just like he's hitting for more home runs, because normally Mookie Betts is that guy who gets a lot of contact on the ball and is able to, you know, get his batting average up there and able to steal bases and all that. But he always hit him with some power, hitting home runs. I'm like, man, okay, how am I wrong that, like, who else makes the case? You know what I'm saying? Because he's bad. You know, Mookie is almost averaging 700 for a slugging percentage of 18 stolen bases. Like just not a two-legged race in the AL.
Well, I mean, you make some really good points about both Trout and Betts. I just have all the stats written down in front of me, and I think it's a little bit easier to make my case if I actually read the stats. So, you know, starting with Trout, this is just through the All-Star break, not counting, you know, the few days since. 335 at-bats through the All-Star break, Mike Trout had scored 71 runs, hit 25 home runs, had 50 RBIs, 15 stolen bases, hitting .310 with 3 triples and 18 doubles.
Okay.
Mookie Betts, like we were talking about, significantly less number of at-bats because of the injury. So 301 at-bats, has scored 79 runs, 23 home runs, like you were saying, an upped home run count from when he had in previous years, 51 RBIs, the 18 stolen bases. Now, here's the number that sticks out. Hitting 359 with three triples and 25 doubles. Now, Mookie plays, you know, in Fenway Park. There's a green monster, so, you know, it's arguable that if he playing in other parks, he could have maybe 21 doubles and 27 home runs. So, you know, there's that possibility. But okay. I'm going to bring up another guy, and you briefly touched on him before, and that's J.D. Martinez, another guy with the Red Sox. Now, we're going to go through the same numbers. So 354 at-bats, J.D., 72 runs scored, leading the pack with home runs with 29 home runs. Now, here's a significant boost right here. J.D. has 80 RBIs through the halfway point. He's hitting 328 with one triple and 23 doubles. Now, you can apply that same argument that I made for Mookie Betts to J.D. about the doubles playing in Fenway with the Green Monster. He arguably could have 19 doubles and 34 home runs. So 33 home runs. So, you know, these two Red Sox guys, I think, is going to really duke it out. And I think the fan favorite is Mike Trout. But if you really break it down and look at the numbers, I really think it's between these two Red Sox guys, how it happens down the stretch, whether one fizzles out, whether they keep battling. I think it's going to be interesting to see.
I agree with it's going to be a battle. I just, JD definitely leads it. But I just feel he's going to, like, you know, when you're in 29 home runs in the first half of the year, you know you're going to see that number fall down.
I just feel like that's just not going to sustain you.
That's not going to sustain you through the season. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it'd be impressive to see JD hit 50. You know what I'm saying? Like, in my eyes, because I know JD hits for power. And we've seen guys like Stanton last year, you know, start off slow and then go hot in the second half of the year. But I just feel 29 home runs is a lot to hit a home in the first half of the year.
That's a huge number.
So I just feel he's going to fall off. That's why I said it's going to be a two-leg race between Betts and Trout, just because of their skill sets and how it's going to, like, play out. I'm just going to say Mookie Betts. I think he's having an incredible year already. And I think he's just, with those two, with his less at-bats than Trouty does, yeah. It gives him a little bit of advantage, in my opinion, because now get a little bit fresher now for the second half. So if Mookie Betts continues those numbers, I think he'll win the MVP. But let's move on to the NL. The NL side of things. There's a couple of guys we definitely like. And I'm just going to say it. I love Nolan Arenado. This kid just, like, he plays for the Rockies. So, you know, he plays in, Coors Field. So, so some of his numbers may get a little bit skewed at times, but honestly, when Arenado's on the road, like, he gets it done. I mean, on the year right now, he's hitting 313, 72 RBIs. He has 110 hits. Like, this guy is literally crushing the ball. And this kid's just a stud. Like, what else can I say about him? He's a five-time Gold Glover, three-time Silver Slugger. Like, he's just a guy that's going to get it done. You know what I'm saying? So, he's 25 home runs on the year. So, I mean, what else can you say about Nolan Arenado? I mean, this guy gets it done. And if the Rockies have any shot of getting into the postseason, they're going to rely on him heavy.
And I totally agree with that. That's a great take on Arenado. But like you were saying, you know, Coors Field definitely plays in. I mean, why do you think that a player playing? Did you hear me that whole time?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I apologize to the people. It sounded like we cut out a little bit there. So, you know, when you think about a player playing at Coors Field, some of the numbers tend to be diminished a little bit. You know, and I happen to be a Giants fan. I'm in the Bay Area. So I do see a lot of Nolan Arenado. I've been going to spring training down in Scottsdale, Arizona for the last 15 years, a gorgeous, gorgeous Salt River complex that they have down there for Colorado. And I've seen Nolan Arenado since he started with the team. And his defense just goes so severely underrated. And I think that, you know, yeah, he has 25 home runs. plays at Coors Field. So you can take a few of those away, and I still think that he's up at the top of the list.
But so is he? So is he your? So is he your favorite for the NL? So is he your favorite for the NL MVP, or would you say someone else's?
Well, I mean, there's this other guy I'm going to mention right now, and I've been, you know, on my Braves harp already with the rookies.
Yeah, we know.
I'm going to get back to the Braves harp, and that's with Freddie Freeman. Now, I'm going to read some numbers just through the halfway point of the season, just because we've kind of, that's a trend we've been doing. So, through the halfway point of the season, Freeman, 362 at-bats, 16 home runs, 61 RBIs, hitting .315 with 3 triples and 25 doubles. Now, the first thing that jumps off the paper to me, at least, is the stark difference between the numbers in the AL and the NL. I mean, holy moly, but that's a whole nother topic. I think, you know, Freddie Freeman is a veteran presence on this very young Braves team. The Braves are in the hunt for the playoffs. It's arguable that they could make the playoffs, in which case I just think you have to give it to Freddie Freeman. I love Nolan Arenado. I think he's a great player on both sides, but I don't think that the Rockies are going to make the playoffs, and the Coors Field aspect, I mean, it doesn't really diminish it for me, but it diminishes it for me enough. Just being an NL West guy, knowing the drastic difference that Coors Field does in between June and August. Can a corn fly balls turn into home runs that just clear the fence? And I'm sure Nolan has a few of those.
Fair enough. I guess we'll have to see what happens with this NL MVP race. I'm saying if the Rockies make the playoffs, I think Arenado gets the award.
I think that gives
them the edge. So I guess we'll have to see what these Rockies got to do second half, and we'll have to see if these predictions come true, ring true at the season's end.
I'm moving over to the Dodgers. I just don't see the Rockies making any sort of a push.
We'll see, man. I mean, with the Manny Machado, you know, trade going, Manny Machado going to the Dodgers. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's it's pretty big. But we're going to shift gears now to our favorite topic. You know, me and Ant love to talk about the NBA. We love to talk about the NBA. You know, so we're going to dive in here. First news, as it was reported on Wednesday, recording on Sunday, Kawhi Leonard being traded to the Toronto Raptors. you go from a hot, humid climate with no taxes to another country in Canada where it's cold as hell. So, that being said, Kawhi Leonard being traded to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan, well, him and Danny Green being traded to the Toronto Raptors for Jakob Poeltl, the 2019 first-round pick, and DeMar DeRozan. So, that being said, your thoughts on this trade, Ant, because I think you honestly got to give it to San Antonio because they not only got a player that averages over 27 points per game, but able to get a decent young piece in Jakob Poeltl and a first-round pick, and you get rid of Kawhi Leonard's drama case with his uncle and all that type of stuff. So go ahead, Ant.
Gosh, I mean, this has been a situation that we've been watching for a while now, and I think it's actually almost comical that we thought that Kawhi was going to be playing for a team that LeBron's on, but now he's just playing for a team that LeBron owns, and that's the Toronto Raptors. Just a little NBA joke for those of you guys out there. I think Jakob Poeltl, I think that's a piece of this trade that's really going underlooked. And, you know, I also heard per Woj that there was a projected 2019 first-round pick also involved that the Spurs got.
Yeah, I said that.
I just missed my quote. Yeah, the Spurs absolutely won the trade, 100%. I mean, is Toronto getting better? Yes, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But I think the Spurs just absolutely win this trade. DeRozan is a great player to play out on the wing. He's going to score points. And I think that this helps them compete in the West a little bit more than they did. They have Rudy Gay now. You add DeRozan, you have more scoring pieces. And another thing, I also heard that the DeRozan contract was still good until 2021. So they have him under contract. Am I right?
Yep, you are right about that. You're definitely right.
I think that's also huge. And I think another funny part about this is that Kawhi goes from a team in Texas where he's not paying much of an income tax to a team in Toronto where he's going to be taxed twice. Now, yep. Let me get to the Toronto side of this. So, is Toronto really better after this move? I think the answer is obviously yes. Kawhi Leonard, the Claw, as a lot of us like to call him, is probably one of, if not the best defender in the league. He changes games. And, you know, at this point, it's almost obvious to see, you know who you're going to see in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, you're going to see Boston, and you're going to see Toronto, and if you're going to see a tight game between Indiana and whichever one of those teams that they get to face. Now, where does Toronto really go now that they lose DeRozan at the two spot? Because, I mean, they're obviously not going to plug Kawhi in at the two. I mean, I could see there being a little bit of a rotation between Frank VanVleet and Lowry, or potentially see Lowry shift over completely or VanVleet play the two. I mean, what do you think? Do you think CJ Miles is going to come into the mix? How do you see this rotation going?
The rotation will be interesting because I don't – you know, it's interesting to think about this trade. I think the only thing that – you know, what I'd be concerned about San Antonio is that DeMar DeRozan's three-point shooting. And obviously we know he's not a three-point scorer like that. He's just he's a decent scorer in general. But he's not a great, like, three-point shooter. That's the only thing that probably, like, steers me away from how San Antonio may lose this trade. But to go on what you were talking about rotation-wise in Toronto, I think anytime you get the star in the trade, more than likely you win the trade. However, I mean, we don't even know if Kawhi Leonard's healthy yet. We don't even know if Kawhi Leonard's healthy yet to even know what's really going to happen. I think he's healthy, but you just never know. But as far as the rotations go, I think, yeah, you'll have to rely on CJ Miles more, Norman Powell off the bench. And I think the rotation is still, like, for the big guys. You get rid of Jakoperto. But I think it's still crowded. I just think Toronto has one more move up their sleeve, and it may even be involving Kawhi Leonard. Maybe they just acquired him just to get a piece in, just to get him and use him as trade bait because they want to get.
I can see them moving Ibaka. I think.
Yeah, so they have to. They have to move. They have to move either JV Ibaka. Or Ibaka. They have to move one of those two.
Pascal Siakam, a guy that goes completely overlooked in everywhere other than Toronto or Daily Fantasy. Pascal Siakam is a guy who will fill in for Ibaka, probably play the same as Ibaka, maybe a small drop-off in defense with the blocks, but he's a guy that will stretch the floor and probably be a better plus-minus guy than Ibaka already as is right now.
I agree. So, I mean, overall, I think, yeah, you get a little bit better because Kawhi is one of the, when healthy, is one of the best two-way players, if not the best two-way player in the game. And, you know, you're just putting more, you know, now you're just divvying up your shots a little bit more if you're Serrano. So for the rotation, you get Danny Green as well, you know what I'm saying, to kind of fill in the void for DeMar DeRozan. And Danny Green has really been a shell of himself the last 3 years. So I'm not sure how much left he has in the tank, honestly, but we'll have to see. So I think overall, I think the trade can definitely go one way or another. But, yeah, you got to like San Antonio, what they got, a first-round pick, Jakoperto and DeMar DeRozan. So moving on, Melo. Your boy Carmelo Anthony was in the news. And OKC somehow found a way to trade Carmelo Anthony. And he got traded to the Atlanta Hawks for Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala. So that being said, the OKC Thunder, I feel, is getting ready to, you know, have someone come off the bench decently. And Dennis Schroeder, who is a young cat point guard. But I think the problem with that trade is that I wonder if they'll let Westbrook go or if they're going to trade him the next couple of years. I have no idea. That would be interesting. For the Atlanta side, we all know Melo is not going to be Atlanta Hawk for long. They're most likely going to get a buyout that's going to happen with his contract. And then, so I have two questions for you. What do you think about Dennis Schroeder being on OKC Thunder? And also, where will Melo go? Because I think he's going to the Rockets.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a great question. Dennis Schroeder could be one of my favorite underrated point guards in the NBA.
Oh, that was Jeremy Lin.
Jeremy Lin's on that list too. You know me well. But, I mean, talking Schroeder, we're talking about an international player, a guy coming over from Germany. Quick player, good defense, and he is a streaky, streaky scorer. Anybody who watches the Hawks knows Dennis Schroeder, knows what he can do. He can score 35 points, get you 10 assists, and get you 5 to 7 steals in a game. That's what Dennis Schroeder is going to bring you. With that being said, I mean, listeners, you can imagine a guy who's scoring, running the offense. How is that going to clash with Russell Westbrook? Are they going to bring him off the bench? You think not, because he's a step up from a guy like Andre Roberson on every part other than the defensive end. So you could potentially see him sliding in at the two spot. Maybe they move Westbrook to the two spot and he's more of like a hybrid guard. You really don't know. I'm interested to see how Schroeder fits in. As a Dennis Schroeder fan, I don't really like this move. I think it really suppresses his growth potential. I think it's going to take away from his shots, his playmaking ability. He's going to be a third, fourth fiddle on this team. I just don't really like the move for Dennis Schroeder or the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think it's a great basketball player that they picked up, and I think that he can help them out.
Agreed.
So that's my analysis on Schroeder.
Agreed. I think I'll say one more thing about it is that, yeah, I definitely agree with him. I mean, you're definitely stunning his growth going to OKC because you'd be playing behind Westbrook. But I think there's definitely going to be times where they'll start Dennis Schroeder at point guard, allow Westbrook to play shooting guard, and for them to sometimes when they have smaller lineups and whatnot. So I think that's a scenario definitely worth watching. Unfortunately, for my Dynasty League, that kind of sucks because I have Dennis Schroeder. But what do you think about Melo? Because I think he's going to Houston so he can provide a little bit of scoring punch for them. But does Melo really think that he's still a starter in the league, that he can really contribute at a high level? Like, he's getting all this money because OKC just gave him, you know, he had that player option. So he's getting paid regardless. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, people would argue that Melo is the best in the NBA at getting the bag. And that is what he just did. He secured the bag when he left OKC. What's your favorite Atlanta Hawk Melo memory, Nick?
There isn't none.
There won't be any. That's exactly right, because Melo secured the bag. He won't be with the Hawks. I think he goes to Houston.
Joe Johnson, huh?
He is an upgraded version of Joe Johnson. He's better than Bobby Bonilla, except for the fact that he's not going to be getting $1 million a year every year until he dies.
Gosh, yo. Crazy.
So, all right. So, Melo to the Rockets. Everybody who watches Houston knows what kind of offense is Houston. They're primarily an ISO team with James Harden, a lot of ISO. There's Paul. And then you just see the high pick of set free throw liner at the top of the key. And either, you know, they're either going to hit him on the roll, step back and pop that three, or ISO. Now, how does Melo fit into that? Do they bring him off the bench? You know, we talked on the last show about what's going to happen in Houston, you know, with Mute and Ariza going. You know, Ryan Anderson clearly isn't going to be out on the wing playing defense. So, I could potentially see Melo in there just as a body, an upgrade. I like Ryan Anderson. When they get away from the ISO, it's a pick and roll at the top of the key with Capella setting the screen at the free throw line or at the top of the key from three and then rolling to the hoop. How does Melo fit into that? You know, Melo is an on-ball offensive guy. He's an ISO mid-range jump shot. He's not taking hoops back in Denver or even in New York. Now, it's interesting when you think about Melo to the Rockets, because you saw Melo kind of transitioning out of that number one superstar role last year when he went to OKC. Now, in OKC, he was the third rung on the ladder, so to speak. And he didn't really do too well in that role. I mean, we really saw the lack of peripheral stats Carmelo doesn't put up, as he, you know, was averaging, what was it, 3 rebounds a game?
Yeah, he's never put up those peripheral stats, though, in his career.
No, he's never been a peripheral guy, but when you leave the star on-ball role, you would expect a guy with that caliber, that sort of a pedigree, to step up the peripheral stats. I mean, we're talking about an Olympian here. He should know that if he's not touching the ball every single time down the court, he should at least be boxing out and attempting to get rebounds. And we saw a lot of Melo standing around. Now,
I have to give him a little bit of lack because he's never been in that type of role before. And we all know Westbrook and Paul George use the ball in their hands a ton. So it doesn't leave much shots for Melo. But, I mean, give credit where credit was. Like, I get why you're slandering him. I get him. But do you feel like he could definitely fit with this Rockets team because of the way they play they play ball? Because they come out, they're a running team who just shoots a lot of three-pointers. Will lead the feel he could fit right in?
That's what I was kind of getting to is I think Melo's an ISO guy, and they run so much ISO. You wonder where he's going to fit. Is he going to be in this, is he going to be starting? Is he going to be coming off the bench? And it's Melo, so you automatically think he's going to be starting. We touched on the last show, with Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbah-Amute leaving the Rockets. So those are their small forwards, their threes, their small fours that they were using when they were running that up-tempo role. Can they just plug Melo in there? I mean, on the show last time, we were talking about Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson is not the defender. He's not the guy that's going to be out on the wing. So I arguably could see Melo sliding into that Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbah-Amute role. I think he's going to get more shots, and I think he's going to be in a more of an up-tempo role. And I think after playing a year in OKC as that third fiddle, it's going to be a little bit easier for him to fit in. So I think we could see a little bit of a resurgence from Melo in Houston as far as the points per game goes, and even potentially the rebounds and steals per game just because of the way that the Rockets play. So I think that, Melo to Houston is a good move for Melo. For Houston, I think there might have been some other guys out there that they could have got they haven't got Melo yet, but there are other guys they could have gone after potentially for a cheaper price tag that would have demanded less and potentially given more. So I think it's a great move for Melo. I don't know how great of a move it is for Houston, and we'll see how it plays out.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll definitely have to see how it plays out. Let's go into Summer League and talk about some rookies. Let's just talk about rookies in general. Summer League was definitely nice to see, especially your boy Grayson Allen, right? basically, like, honestly, like, just watching, like, the Summer League was just really, really great to watch, because it just seems like every year the Summer League is growing more and more because of the prospects that are coming out, and we're just so excited to watch them on court. A guy that really just stands out to me, and I definitely love this upcoming year, is Jared Jackson of the Memphis Grizzlies. This guy is really, like, something to talk about. He can play a lot of both four positions. I feel like he'll play him at center at times, too, when the season comes about for the Grizzlies, when they want to go a little bit smaller and want to be playing a little more athletic. And I think Memphis is going to gear back to those, the grindhouse type of side. What other rookies do you like? Because I definitely love Jared Jackson.
Yeah, I think Jackson's going to be great in Memphis. I mean, you could see what he did in the summer league. You mentioned Memphis. You guys like Mike Conley there to help bring him along. So I think it'll be nice to see what he does in Memphis. Just real quick before we get in, I just want to talk about the leaders of the summer league just so we can kind of get a picture of who we're looking at and talking about. So our point leaders for 2018 summer league was John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks. In second was Malik Monk from Charlotte. Third was Josh Hart, who actually was the MVP of the Summer League. Fourth was Kevin Knox from the Knicks, who I know you really like.
Yeah.
Fifth was Antonio Blakeney, a guy who only Chicago fans and, basketball DFS sharks know is Antonio Blakeney, and the kid can support. So rebound leaders, there's a few guys we don't really know. Emil Jefferson from Minnesota, Ante Zizek from Cleveland, a guy who I know a lot of DFS guys like is Willie Hernan Gomez for Charlotte, averaged 12 boards a game. And a guy who you're going to be hearing a lot about this year from the Nets, and that's Jarrett Allen, was fourth in boards with 11 per game. The assist leaders for the Summer League, we had Frank Mason from Sacramento with 8, Wade Baldwin, who's now with Portland, with 7, Chris Chioza, the Washington Wizards, who I actually don't know too much about Chioza. And then a guy who I really like is Aaron Holiday for the Indiana Pacers, who was 4th in assists. So, Josh Hart was the MVP of the Summer League. Josh Hart is a guy who we really like. He's a Laker guy. He came in last year when Lonzo went down, played a lot of point guard, played some two guard when KCP went down. And it's just a guy who absolutely fills up the stat sheet. Now, he is not a rookie. He's the second year guy. But, you know, that's not to take away from his performance in the summer league and what he's going to do with LeBron on his team in a new role. I could potentially see the Lakers down the line putting in Josh Hart over Lonzo. I could really see that.
That's interesting. Interesting. But as far as rookies go, because Josh Hart is not a rookie, what are some rookies you're definitely excited to see this year and their situations that could impact their situations that they can impact for their teams respectively?
That's a good question. So real quick, before I hit the two true rookies, I want to talk about one other second year guy who's, I believe, is only 20, maybe 21, and that's Josh Collins for the Atlanta Hawks. He only played two games in the summer league, led the entire summer league with 24 points a game, had over 10 boards a game. He's only 20. So this is a guy for the Atlanta Hawks that you're going to see probably averaging a double-double. You could see maybe a 10-block game out of John Collins this year. 40 minutes.
Statement.
I would not be surprised if you saw a 10-block game. You heard it here first, everybody. So now, actual true rookies. Now, you said it at the beginning, Grayson Allen. This is a guy who, you know, I just love to watch Grayson play because he has so many haters. Now, you wonder why. It's a four-year Duke guy. You know, four years at Duke is something that rarely do you see a four-year Duke guy come into the NBA and not play well, not be a role player, not be a great defensive player. And that's just a tribute to Coach K and what they have going on at Duke. Now, Grayson goes to a team in Utah. Utah Jazz have a ton of upside. If there is a young team in the Western Conference that I like, other than the Phoenix Suns, it's probably the Utah Jazz. I love the Utah Jazz. I love Spider Mitchell. I've been talking this kid up, Spider Mitchell, since the beginning of last year. You add Grayson Allen to that mix with guys like Rudy Gobert, Royce O'Neal, Ricky Rubio. You see a team who's really going to make a push in the Western Conference this year, whereas a lot of people probably aren't expecting it outside of Donovan Mitchell. Now, the last rookie I want to touch on is a guy I touched on in the last show, and that's Aaron Holiday. The pedigree is there. The speed is there. You know, you heard me talk about how he was in the top five of assists. He's not just a scorer. He's clearly distributing the ball. For an Indiana Pacers team, it's going to surprise a lot of people in the Eastern Conference, and I could very well see Aaron Holiday being in the top five, top three discussion for the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Year.
And I can't disagree about Aaron Holiday because he'll be playing, and I definitely can't agree with the take on Indiana because Indiana is definitely going to surprise some teams this season. The Eastern Conference wide open, and he comes from the bloodline of the Holiday playing the league. So I mean, I'm not too shocked about what he's doing. We're going to dive into some NFL topics. We're going to start though. Might throw you off a little bit, but we're going to start with some. We're going to start with T.O. and the Hall of Fame. And that because Terrell Owens, obviously, one of the best to do it in the game at receiver in the NFL. And for him to not attend the Hall of Fame because it's announced that he won't be going to Hall of Fame, and the Hall of Fame will not be showing any footage of Terrell Owens when it's, you know, when they have to call his name. So that being said, I mean, Terrell Owens is going to be at Chattanooga, his university that he made a mark on at his college, really made an impact. And now he'll be doing that with his close friends and family, and he'll do it there. So that being said, like, you know, my thoughts on Terrell Owens, him not showing, is not surprising, obviously, if you ask some people, but not surprising because of how much in a picture on what Terrell Owens, like, you know, how big of a problem that he so-called was in a lot of locker rooms when he was playing in the NFL. For the media to continue to hold that in him, it's kind of shameful. And I felt like, and for him to be not be a Hall of Famer is kind of a slap in the face because we name, there's what, 3-4 Hall of Famers already on this list that we're going to be inducting in a matter of next week? So from today, so we're going to be honoring Ray Lewis, going to be honoring Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher, all three of those guys, first ballot Hall of Famers. So why isn't Terrell Owens a first ballot Hall of Famer? So that being said, I mean, Terrell Owens, I mean, murders himself, but Ant, you got to let me know what your thoughts on Terrell Owens for having been the first player to not show up for a Hall of Fame. And will he regret that?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. So, you know, those of you who have listened to me on the show, you know, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I actually grew up watching Terrell Owens as a Niner. Terrell Owens did some things on the football field that I personally just have never seen anyone else do. You compare guys like Chad Johnson to Terrell Owens, but that doesn't even really a comparison. You make the early Dez Bryant comparison, and it's not really it. You kind of throw Randy Moss up there, but it's like, that's not even really it. Terrell Owens was a beast on the slants. Terrell Owens could beat you up the sideline. He would bump and run with the best of them. Terrell Owens could juke like you couldn't believe. He would jump over you. He would throw a stiff arm down your throat. As far as I'm concerned, Terrell Owens is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I think what you were saying about the ongoing vendetta that the media has kind of held against T.O., even after his playing career, I think probably adds to the reason why T.O. isn't going. I mean, T.O. is a very, very emotional guy. Everyone remembers the famous teary-eyed press conference when he was in Dallas talking about Tony Romo, you know, that's my quarterback. T.O. is a very emotional guy, and I think that he's almost trying to send a message by not showing up. I don't think it's necessarily that he's a bad guy. I think it's T.O. trying to say something.
I get it. There's countless guys have come out and have said that, oh, Terrell Owens is going to, you know, regret not going to this, that, and third, and being celebrated for what he does. And I can say that can be true, but only if, like, honestly, if you're going to be celebrated with the people that were there for you thick and thin, have been there all that time and be celebrating with some people that, you know, like I said, have been in there thick and thin for you, why not just be there? I mean, you know, it doesn't have, you know, I mean, he's the first player. I mean, whenever someone does something the first thing as a pioneer, they're going to be scrutinized. you know, that's just like telling your friends you're going to open up your own business and they're not going to believe you at all. It's like, all right, well, I'm stepping away, like, guys, like, I'm going to open my own business. They're going to laugh at you, tease at you, and all this type of things. So, like, that being said, though, I mean, Terrell Owens, like, his record, I mean, there's talk about him. He'll lose money because he's not doing this. I don't want to hear that. Terrell Owens, once Terrell Owens says Hall of Famer next to his name, it won't matter. Yeah. Terrell Owens, exactly. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is going to break. Terrell Owens right now sits second among others in yards, but behind him with like 15,545 yards. So, and Terrell Owens has 15,934. Larry Fitzgerald is going to, you know, pass him, you know, barring injury. Larry Fitzgerald is going to pass him on the all-time leaders list for receiving yards. And Terrell Owens literally is the guy that, you know, he just did it all on the field, no matter who his quarterback was. And even when he had problems, he still went out there and performed.
Absolutely.
You know, even, you know, let's say when the Philadelphia Eagles went to the Super Bowl, Terrell Owens had broke his leg 8-10 weeks prior. What did Terrell Owens do? Instead of mailing it in the bag like most athletes would, he's like, I'm going to play in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to be effective. The guy had over 6 catches for 100 yards and a TD. The Super Bowl. Recovered from a broken leg. Like, I don't want to hear this. Terrell Owens, third time on a touchdown list, 53, three on the list. And Jerry Rice, we all know, has 197. So, I don't want to hear issues about whatever shame he's not showing up. That he's not showing up. Selection process, and that's what we have to look at, the selection process. Who should really be first ballot Hall of Famer? Who shouldn't be? Because now it's more prevalent now than ever. Because I hear all these things about, oh, well, they didn't let so-and-so, you know, dig the, you know, they let, you know, several other, like, older guys, like, let them in on the first ballot. They had to wait. It's like, well, but if you're deserving of that first ballot Hall of Fame, you shouldn't wait. So, that being said, that's what, you know, basically that's what the tangent I have on for this segment on T.O. Anything else before we move on, Ant?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you really just can't fault T.O. for deciding not to give his Hall of Fame induction speech in Canton. I mean, I really don't think it's going to take away from T.O.'s legacy because of what type of a diva people think he is. I think football sharps and people who watch T.O. know T.O., know what T.O. did, and will appreciate what Tito did and we'll understand how great Tito was regardless of what happened.
I definitely agree. I think we're on the same page on this one. I mean, originally I thought that Terrell Owens should definitely just go, but to be honest, the heck with the people that selected him for it. It's like he should have been Hurt Business Hall of Fame years ago. So, that being said, though, we're gonna move into our other topic, and we're gonna move to the other side of the ball, because this coming Tuesday will officially mark Darrell Revis. Former cornerback for the Jets, Patriots, and the Buccaneers, will be retiring as a New York Jet, signing his one-day contract to be a New York Jet to retire with them. And Darrell Revis is literally the cornerback that you don't want to face in this generation. Darrell Revis is the guy that I'm not throwing the ball to because I know my receiver is going to have a long day fighting against him. That being said, Darrell Revis has a Super Bowl ring with the Patriots, but all in all, Mitt spent most of his career with the New York Jets. And all in all, Darrell Revis is, in some eyes, you know, that people want to say he's a top five corner. And I have to attend to agree. Darrell Revis was, like I said, that player for the last generation, and in this generation, we'll look back on that. Anytime they entered Revis Island, your number one receiver was going to have a long day. Whether it be Terrell Owens, like, you know, Chad Johnson's of the world, Reggie Wayne, who he held to one catch, 9 yards in a playoff game, A.J. Green, who he held for two catches, 38 yards in a playoff game. You know, these things that he did throughout his whole career, took a halfway in the field and made you throw to the other side of the field, because you were in danger of throwing an interception his way. So anytime you have a player like that, you know, Darrell Revis' stats don't exactly, like, if you want to look at his statistics, so to speak, they're not exactly up there by no means as an interception rate or anything along those lines. But Darrell Revis will go down as one of those guys that you will never, ever want to face one-on-one or throw to, because he was going to impact the game. You know, he literally took the blueprint of Deion Sanders and really made it. He was one of the best, if not one, like, you know, the best press man corner ever. So your thoughts, Ann, on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you hit all the buzz points, and I totally agree with the thing you said. I mean, Darrell Revis really is the corner of this Twitter generation, if you even want to call it. I mean, Darrell Revis was the first guy to have a nickname like he had. I mean, he was the island. I mean, now you put him on an island, you're talking about football, everybody immediately knows what you're talking about. And it's in reference to a shutdown corner, and all you have to say is the island. That is what Darrell Revis did to the NFL. Is he a top five corner overall? Yeah, I think he is. Just barely, yeah, I think he is. And I think he was one of the best players in the entire NFL from 2018 till about 2014. In my eyes, I put Darrell Revis behind guys like Deion Sanders, Ty Law, and Champ Bailey. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the only guys who I'm putting ahead of Darrell Revis. I mean, yes, there are other guys in the past, secondary players that I would put ahead, a Ronnie Lott type player.
Rod Woodson.
These are secondary guys. We're not talking about straight up corners. So when we talk about the straight-up corner debate, yes, Darrell Revis is
top. I think he was better than Champ, in my opinion. He's better than Champ Bailey. He's literally – I mean, if we're talking about, like, corners of all time, I mean, yeah, Deion Sanders is obviously number one in my eyes because the way he impacted the game. But I think Darrell Revis is anywhere from 2 to 5.
I threw Ty Law and Champ ahead just because they had a little bit more winning success.
Makes sense. I mean, Ty Law, obviously, I mean, you could definitely, if you want to say Ty Law second, I have no problem you saying that. I've watched Ty Law so many times. Like, he was the beast, and he was the clutch guy. Clutch guy as a corner, he was definitely the clutch guy of them all. So if you want to say Ty Law second, I get it. But Darrell Revis can be anywhere, like I said, from second to five in his top five list, because – I mean, Arenas Williams, you know, like before my time, you know, he was also one of those great corners for the Rams years ago. I mean, so there's a debate that goes on, but I definitely think Darrell Revis deserves to be a top five corner.
Well, I agree, and I think people people try to say, they try to knock him and they say, oh, you know, Rebus was just a paid mercenary. I think that's a joke. I mean, just listen to that. Paid mercenary. What? How much loyalty is there in professional sports these days? Zero. Rarely do you see a guy who's not going to take the higher contract offer. Does that automatically make him a mercenary? Absolutely not. Was Darrell Revis going to the highest bidder, you know, to take out offenses? Yes.
Does it I don't think so. He only played for three teams. And also, he got traded to the Buccaneers from the Jets. He went to the Patriots, and then he went to the Jets. I don't get why he was a paid mercenary, so to speak, when he only got traded one time and he went to another team through free agency. I mean, yes, did he get paid? Yes. Like, some people want to call Revis the Melo of the NFL, and I'm just that's just not accurate because Melo hasn't won a championship yet, so that's not accurate. So, oh man, so Ant, tell the people where they can follow you on Twitter.
Oh, God. Where you guys can follow me on Twitter? My Twitter handle is @A_Papster. I'm on the Twitter. All the takes are my own. @A_Papster88. @A_PAPSTER88. All takes are my own. I try to give out some funny stuff, but mostly just sports stuff. So.
Cool. And also, go check out Ant's website, thenorthbaycompany.com. He's got some awesome stuff, t-shirts, hats, stuff like that. You guys got to check out. Be sure to check it out. Ant, pleasure, man. We'll be doing this again. Talk to you soon, man.
All right.
All right, guys. Thank you for tuning into the Sports Breakdown. We love you.